Has anybody here heard of a trend, a Christian trend, called muscular Christianity? It started sometime in the mid-1800s in England. And it was this, I don't know, movement that brought about a few things that we are kind of aware of. It is why the YMCA has that strong athletic and fitness portion to their work and their ministry. It is also still seen in things like Christian groups that are in high school that are always looking to get the football players and the cheerleaders involved. It is also that brand of Christianity that is sort of the foundation for something like the Promise Keepers, which have fallen out of news of late, but some of you might remember 10, 15 years ago, where men would get together and promise to be godlike and godly in all that they can do, and do it in a strong, manly way. And indeed, manliness is a big part of this sort of movement that pops up and is expressed every once in a while in Christian history. When it was started, one of the starters said that it was needed to get rid of all that was weak, effeminate, and not British in Christianity. All right? Yes, that should bring a smile. Now, you might very well think that that is quaint and old and only in England. Well, it's not, because if you go online, you can find images for that muscular Jesus, all right? You've got that square chin and heroic aspect to Jesus at times. You have pictures of Jesus on the cross, not just with a six-pack. All right, there's a 12-pack around the 6-pack, all right? And the biceps have biceps, all right? And in one, there is Jesus looking mighty fierce, I gotta tell you. And he's armed. He's armed with two planks of wood that can be used as a shield or as something to knock. And it's only after you look at it for a couple of seconds that you realize that he's not holding on to that wood. That wood is nailed to his hands. All right? He has broken the wood off the cross and he's going to battle. Arr, Jesus. I'm not big on this idea. And it's this passage in Philippians that brought it up to me. Because I think from this passage, we can ask ourselves, what is strong? What is strength? And what Paul is suggesting here in Philippians is very different from what the world suggests is strong. Did you hear that? Jesus was God, was in the form of God. And Jesus emptied himself of that divinity. Jesus was human, became human, and was born. Not a particularly noble thing, being born, as I've been thinking more and more about that. And he was born not to be strong, but to be a slave, Paul says, a servant, obedient to something beyond himself, outside of himself. Paul says that in the form of God, Jesus did not hold that that was a power that should be exploited for whatever he wanted. We could have an entire sermon about talking about being aware of others and the common good. But I think that this passage is really letting us know that what the world is telling us is strong is not strong in our tradition. It is not strong like Jesus was strong. So when we're in the mind of Jesus, Paul's phrase, we're talking about a strength that is different. And if we're going to be in the mind of Jesus, then we need to live differently. We need to understand and see things differently. It's no longer going to be about winning and victory and showing our strength and making sure that we win and that we get others to do what they need to do for their own good, mind you, but they're going to do it our way. That's just not the way Jesus did it, is it? And you know that. We have too many arguments that are trying to produce more heat than light, more argumentation, more anger than light and wisdom and understanding. Not only do we want to win arguments, we want to get the other person to admit we won and we were right. And we'll keep going until they do. Luckily, when I did youth work, I learned from teens that they're never going to admit that, at least not for 10 years. All right? Made parenting a lot easier. We have to understand that strength is going to be expressed differently. Someone who comes into the room showing strength. Maybe it's a different type of strength. Perhaps the person who comes into the room with a walker. Again. Still. Maybe that's the person who is strong again. Maybe when people mourn, we will stop encouraging them to be strong for the children. And we won't think of them crying as breaking down. I really hate that. Maybe when we're in a discussion, argument in politics, we won't try to paint the other side as demons, as wrong, as weak on this and bad on that, and just awful, awful people. And I mean that international politics, national politics, and church politics. But instead, we will value collaboration, the willingness to admit mistake and error as strength. Maybe we'll be able to see that acknowledging the goodness of somebody else's point of view as a strength. I think all of those are truly strong. And to cry, to admit wrong, to ask for help in our society is really a sign of strength. Because all of society is saying, don't do that. We'll call you weak. So you got to be strong enough to say, okay, I'm weak. I need the help. I was wrong. You were right. This is a better way of doing it. That's going to take some strength. I think it's going to take the strength that comes from being like Jesus, not assuming that our way is best. Humility, not arrogance. And I think that that sort of nuanced strength is really what true leadership is going to be all about. Truly. When the Boy Scouts were here, and I'm pointing over here because that's where they all sat, I mentioned that I had been in Scouts for a long time, 9 years, 11 years. My last year of Scouting was a Sea Scout, a Sea Explorer. And as part of that, they took a long cruise every summer. And you had to be of a certain rank, and by gummy, I made sure I was of that certain rank. They had use of two 36-foot sloop-rigged sailboats. One was called the Replique, and the other one was Poseidon. We sailed in Long Island Sound. We went to Block Island and Cuttyhunk and other places. But it was on the leg to Cuttyhunk where we actually lose sight of land for a while. You have to steer by the compass reading. And I wasn't very good at it, all right? I kept thinking that the boat was more like a car and that you just had to get it to go the way you wanted it to go. So if you're heading off that way, you just pointed the boat that way and you went. And that works for a powerboat. With a powerboat, you can do that. Power. Ah, gonna go the way I want to go. Sailboats. No. But on that leg to Cuttyhunk, I learned to sail. Our course was set, and a storm was coming. And someday I'll tell you about the next day in Cuttyhunk Harbor. But the wind was picking up. It was a little variable. And what that means is that the wind was coming not just from one set direction only. It was shifting like that. And your sails get set based on where the wind is. So if the wind is coming from one direction, well, if it's coming from that direction and you want to go in that direction, you're not going to go in that direction, all right? You're going to go in that direction, and then go in that direction, and then go in that direction. You tack back and forth. But if you want to go in that direction, and the wind is from that way, you set your sails. And you try to get the tiller set so that you're not giving it any resistance in the water, because that resistance turns the boat and slows it down. So you set your sails so you can go that way, and you just do little modifications with the tiller. But when the wind is shifting, all of a sudden it can be coming from there. And now the boat is rigged so that it's going to be pushed over heel, lean, more so because of the way the wind is set. All right? So you either have to change the sails or change your course. Eventually, everybody went down below decks while I was on the tiller. So resetting the sails wasn't going to happen. And sometimes the wind would shift over more this way. But I figured it out. You don't set a single course. You work with the wind. You work with a boat. And if the wind is coming from that way, well, you you're going to fall off a little bit. You're going to move from the bow of the boat a little farther away from where the wind is coming. So the sails are still set, and you can keep the tiller as minimally in the water as possible, and your speed picks up. And if the wind shifts back, well, great. Now you can move back. What's that? You've oversteered a little bit, and you've gone over that way. Well, don't panic. You can just catch the wind a little bit in your sail and wait for another wind shift, and that will bring it back. You don't fight it. You don't treat it like a powerboat. You work with the wind. You work with the waves. You work with the tiller. You work with the sails. And it goes. And in fact, I was in the replique. The Poseidon was technically a faster boat and usually was faster. But once we all anchored in that night, the other boat was saying, "So, Mac, were you at the tiller coming into Cutty Hunk?" "No, that was Mark." "What? I guess you learned how to sail then, huh?" "Beat him. Beat him good." Not that I was trying, but I figured it out. And I did not try to impose my will and sense of direction, but worked for the common good to get us into Cutty Hunk before the storm hit, which, as I said, someday you'll hear that story, I'm sure. I think our strength is going to be in the mind of Jesus. And what we're going to call strength is going to determine who we are as an individual, as a church, as a congregation, as a denomination, and as a nation. And Jesus emptied himself. Hear this passage on Communion Sundays when I say, pour it out. Jesus emptied himself. Did not consider that strength to be something to be exploited. Jesus became human, a servant, an obedient slave, Paul says. And that's where we can go when we want to be strong. Amen.